Okay, so good afternoon. As you can see, I have the Internal Affairs Minister here with me today to talk about the government's ICT strategy and action program, which feeds into the Better Public Services Results program. So I'll make a few remarks and then we'll hand over to Chris and then we'll come back and take anything else that you want to talk about for the rest of the day. So when I announced the Better Public Services targets last year, I was clear I wanted goals to stretch the public sector and ones that would help the sector become more innovative, enterprising and of course more driven. Above all, I wanted the public sector to deliver what New Zealanders really want and what they expect from their public services. The ICT strategy and action plan relates directly to results 9 and 10 of the Better Public Services program. Those are namely that New Zealand businesses have a one-stop shop for all government support and advice they need to run and grow their businesses, and secondly, that New Zealanders can complete their transactions easily with government in a digital environment. We want to make it easier for New Zealanders to interact with the government. Doing business with government and getting information from government agencies should be easy for all Kiwis. Underneath results 9 and 10, we've set targets to have 70% uptake of digital and online options for key services by 2017. And to reduce the business cost from dealing with government by 25%. We'll be providing a detailed update on Better Public Services results in July. The ICT strategy is targeted to 2017, the same year as the BPS results. We're already making some good progress towards those targets, by the way. 93% of individual tax returns were filed online in the March quarter. This is up from 75% when the Better Public Service targets were set. 68% of people applying for financial assistance from MSD are now doing that online, up from 48%. And during the same period, about 35% of adult passports were renewed online. This means we are halfway to the 70% target within 6 months of the online service being launched. The online system costs less to run, so passport fees are cheaper, and the average turnaround time is faster than ever before. In the 9 months to the end of May, 115,000 businesses filed 354,000 GST returns through the secure MyIR system, which is 18% of all GST returns filed. So it's clear that when online services make sense and they're easy and safe to use, New Zealanders are early adopters of such systems and they use them. Those same New Zealanders are also taxpayers, so in the end they're the people paying the bills. They want to be assured that the public sector is spending money on ICT systems with the same sort of care they would themselves would, because ultimately that money comes out of their pockets. And New Zealanders rightly expect government agencies to keep their information private, like PAYE details, medical records, and they expect them to be safe and secure. They should also expect the websites and digital platforms they use to have the greatest strength of security as possible. That's a responsibility that I take seriously. Because if we're serious about New Zealanders doing more of their business with government online, then they'll need to have faith that the systems that they are using are safe and secure. To that end, we are beefing up the powers of the government's Chief Information Officer, so he has a public sector-wide mandate to oversee the safety and security of all the public sector's ICT systems, agency procurement arrangements and new ICT initiatives. The GCIO's greater assurance powers will mean he has an in-depth overview of the strengths and weaknesses of the agency's ICT systems. He will also have the power to intervene in any public sector agency ICT procurement or program rollout. The GCIO will also be able to provide independent advice to ministers on whether or not the ICT project should in fact even proceed. This won't guarantee ICT mistakes won't happen again, but it's putting in place the systems to ensure the public sector's ICT facilities are subject to better oversight and, of course, closer scrutiny. As the GCIO embarks on this program of ICT assurance, which starts now, a comprehensive picture of quality and security of public sector ICT systems will emerge. ICT systems in both the public and private sector are subject to constant threats. These include cyber attacks against government and private organisations, where information is at risk and the intellectual property of some of our smartest, most innovative people are endangered. The National Cyber Security Centre reports that for the first half of this year, 161 threats were logged, more than for all of 2012. So it's vital that the GCIO has a clear and comprehensive picture of all of the public sector's ICT property. In order to do this, his office will have more money and more people available to get the job done. As I said last year, meeting better public service targets means giving better public sector leaders more flexibility to operate in different ways. State sector and public finance reform bill, which is before the House, will allow the GCIO to direct Crown entities as well as government departments. So in a nutshell, essentially what the government is saying is that more and more services will be provided online, that more New Zealanders will interact with us through a digital capability, and so we are effectively expanding the mandate of the Chief Technology Officer and the Chief Information Officer. Their mandate will now reach into every ministry and every government department. They will have the capacity to overview and review any system. They'll have a proactive mandate to go out there and look at the quality of all of the systems, and want to ensure that as we spend more and more money in this area, we can get better value for money, we can learn from the experiences of other departments. And it's in line with my view that Kiwis will do an increasing amount of business with the government online, less of it face-to-face, and therefore we have to make sure we get those systems right. And as we can see from things like NovaPay, when we get it wrong, there's a very painful experience. So that's essentially what's happening. We'll pass over to Chris, and then we'll take some questions.
Thank you, Prime Minister. Through this strategy and action plan, we aim to achieve up to $100 million a year in savings by 2017. We will achieve this through smarter investment, shared services and consolidation. By working together better, government departments can achieve economies of scale. One example is RealMe, which is a shared logon service that will be launched next month. RealMe will enable New Zealanders to use one logon and password for different websites, making it much simpler to transact with different departments like IRD and MSD. Another example is infrastructure as a service, which removes the need for government departments to maintain their own backroom ICT, infrastructure, and is expected to save $250 million over the next 10 years. I'd like to touch briefly on the four key areas of the strategy and the action plan so that you understand exactly what they mean. The first key area is that services will be digital by default. We're already supporting a strong drive towards digital and online services through the Better Public Services Result Areas 9 and 10, of which the Prime Minister just spoke. The strategy and action plan will help us to achieve these targets. By 2017, we want all new services to be offered online as the primary channel. We want these services to be so easy to use that people will choose to go online, rather than go into physical offices, wait in the queue, and fill out paper forms. The result will be faster, cheaper, easier services for all New Zealanders. And there is no doubt that this will also result in savings for the government. I want to stress that face-to-face services will be maintained for those who need them. We are very conscious of the need to support people who don't have internet access, and keeping services accessible to everyone will always be front of mind. With this in mind, we will seek to trial community digital hubs, such as libraries, as places where internet access is available to the community. However, it is worth noting that internet use is growing exponentially. As at June of 2012, there were 1.24 million fixed line broadband connections in New Zealand, up from 1.15 million in 2011. There are 4.9 million mobile connections with growing use of smartphones. The second key area of the strategy and action plan is that information will be protected as an asset. Currently, New Zealanders have to provide the same information to different government departments over and over again. We want, for example, for New Zealanders to be able to change their address details once and to share this voluntarily with multiple departments. It is also paramount importance that we protect New Zealanders' private and restricted information. We will continue to implement clear management practices and strong security and privacy controls. We need to give New Zealanders faith and confidence in the way their information is used. At the same time, we want non-sensitive data to be shared and available to develop new services and to create new value. This ties in strongly with the Declaration on Open and Transparent Government, which I released an update on just last week. The third area is that investment and capability will be shared. Until now, government departments have largely been making investment decisions independently of each other. This means that opportunities to achieve economies of scale and to make services more consistent are indeed being missed. We want to reduce duplication and expenditure. We also want to move from government departments owning capital assets to using pooled infrastructure. The cost savings that we can achieve by working together are huge. One example is the Common Web platform we are creating, which will enable government departments to use the same underlying system to create their websites. This contract was recently awarded to a local business called Silverstripe, proving that pooled infrastructure does not necessarily mean offshore vendors. The Common Web platform will improve consistency across websites and potentially save $50,000 per web project, which adds up to $500,000 across the government per year. The fourth and last area is that leadership and culture will deliver change. It is clear that government departments need to lift their game, particularly with respect to privacy and security, and stronger leadership is required, particularly in that area. Our priorities are to strengthen the coordination of privacy and security management, ICT investment and capability. Hand in hand with the strategy and action plan, we're also giving further new functions to the Government Chief Information Officer, or the GCIO, as the Prime Minister spoke about just before, to enable better oversight of government ICT projects and risks. The GCIO role is held by Colin McDonald, the Chief Executive of my Department of Internal Affairs, or the Department of Internal Affairs. The GCIO will now have the ability to firstly provide public sector-wide view of the ICT plans, to secondly identify areas where intervention is required, to thirdly provide ministers with independent advice on whether ICT projects should proceed, and to also report regularly to ministers on ICT assurance. This stronger role responds to the recommendations of the Ministerial Inquiry into NovaPay and the GCIO review of publicly accessible systems. It will enable us to better manage and mitigate risks into the future. Chief executives will still be responsible for managing risks within their own agencies, but the GCIO will provide an independent line of oversight and advice on top of this. This will enable New Zealanders to have better confidence around the way government departments manage their private and confidential information. It also enables the government to intervene earlier where there are problems with ICT projects. This assurance role for the GCIO, coupled with the ICT Strategy and Action Plan, will, I believe, lead to real change across government ICT. Thank you very much.
Minister, why is it important to reassure New Zealanders that the information is safe for the government?
Well, look, there's an insatiable demand, I believe, for ICT services, particularly online, and it's critical that we as a government are able to lift the bar in that area to satisfy consumers, to Kiwis out there.
So are you saying that the reputation has been dented and you're trying to reassure the public
with this? Oh look, there's no doubt that with the MSD systems and the EQC that did dent the reputation, but in saying that, it hasn't stopped the demand from Kiwis for online services. I mean, the Prime Minister talked about you, so 68% of people using MSD now looking for information. The increase over 5 or 6 months of passports online has been quite phenomenal. So, yes, it's made us take a step and consider that we have to lift the bar, but it hasn't stopped the demand.
Prime Minister, does this mean that Colin McDonald was responsible for the Go Live projects?
He was, or he is.
Is he?
Yeah, so essentially what will happen is his mandate will now be to work with each of those departments, but he has the access to go in there of his own mandate and of his own volition. In fact, he'll be actively having to work with them, and in the end, yes, he will be part of the decision-making process before a project goes online. So in the past, he's had an advisory role, or he may or may not have been called in. Now he's the guy where the buck stops, largely with his department and with him.
And he can be called in independently by a minister. If the minister wants an independent line of advice, he can be called in, and the GCIO also has the ability to call an outside advice, which then obviously the department will be responsible for.
So in the case of NovaPay, if it would happen in the future, where would he sit in the process? Would he sit before the ministers, after the ministers?
He would have been in the project right from word go, so projects that are over $10 million, he would definitely be in right from word go. He would have been giving oversight to ministers, to the ICT ministerial forum, which includes the Deputy Prime Minister, Stephen Joyce, myself, Jonathan Coleman, giving advice throughout the process, and, if required, providing an independent audit of the that project as it proceeds.
So where would his yes, it's okay, go live fit?
That would fit it. So ultimately, the CEO of a department will still be responsible for the rollout, the ultimate rollout of a project, but he will sit before that go live decision is made to and give an independent advice to our minister.
So if something goes wrong with the project, the buck would still stop with the CE, not the GCIO?
I think both will be held to account in this, but yes, one of the key things that is in the process of changing as we speak is through SSC, is that Ian Rennie is also involved with changing the job descriptions of CEs to ensure that a wider assurance component is part of their KPIs.
You said that it's going to be cheaper.
Sorry, which can we...
So what role will Colin McDonald play in the IRB upgrade?
So he will play a key role going forward and be involved in each part of the process as we go forward, and again provide an independent advice to that ministerial team.
The
PNC,
it'll make it cheaper to run these processes if
the
costs don't come down for consumers, for example, passport
applications.
Sorry,
Janie, asking me that? Yeah. Look, one of the jobs here is to roll out online services. If you take the passports online service as an example, we're delivering that at a 20% cost saving. Instead of 10 days to turn around passports, they've been delivered in 3 days. And we're already at about 38% of all renewals being done online within 6 months. So, I mean, it's quite a phenomenal uptake in a short space of time.
One way you could improve that would be to move to 10-year passports. The letter to the editor this morning along those lines. Are you thinking about it?
No, we're not thinking of moving to 10-year passports. We're, the security gains that we've gained from 5-year passports has been excellent. And we think it's moved us into an excellent space. It also maintains our ability to have visa-free access to numerous countries, and the cost of our passport is now comparable to the Australians, just as cheap on an annualised basis.
But the Australians and the Brits, I think the Americans don't have 5 years, they have 10 years. What do we know?
Yeah, well, I'd say we're ahead of the ICT and the technology and curve in that regard. We're ahead of the game, I'd say they're behind it.
Would the SIS have routine access to any of these databases?
Oh, routine, no. They have, under the right legal framework, may have capability to access information, but that would require them to have a warrant or a particular reason, and therefore they can look at wide-ranging level of information.
Would the GCSB or SIS be able to put in devices as per the tax bill into any of these databases and then follow up with warrants?
I can't and won't go into all of the capabilities that they use, but I think it's important to take a step back and say they don't have the authority to simply put in techniques to exfiltrate information and then backfill that with legal justification for doing so via warrants. In other words, they can only access information when they're legally entitled to do so, and they can't circumvent that process by gathering the information up front. They have to do that reactively, not proactively. If they have a warrant, then of course that they can go and do deploy a variety of techniques to gather information, but that's after the issuing of the warrant.
Given the GCIO will have a role in protecting New Zealanders' private information and all have access to all departments, will they have access to the GCSB to ensure New Zealanders' private information isn't being, shared with other agencies or other jurisdictions and the like?
Well, it's not the GCIO's role to protect the information that GCSB collects. That's the oversight responsibility of the Inspector General, but him to make sure that ministry carries out its responsibilities and in a way that provides integrity of that information. That's part of their oversight responsibility. I mean, the main message really coming out today is, look, at the end of the day, the government is keen to embrace technology because New Zealanders are keen to embrace technology. We fundamentally need to have better systems with higher levels of security. We have to be proactive and reactive to that. We're living in the 21st century where New Zealanders want to engage with the government online faster and quicker, and we're responding to that. And I think that's a logical thing for us to do, and as the years roll by, less and less will be done face-to-face, more and more will be done online.
Thank you.
Prime Minister, the GCSB on that issue, the Society were very critical of this bill, saying it's unjustified and in breach of freedoms. What's your response?
Well, you know, look, I'm not going to go through all of the submissions at this point because that's before the Intelligence and Security Committee, but what I can tell you on that front, if you're interested, there's been 121 submissions. The Law Society is obviously one of those. I do not agree with the Law Society. I can make that point, that I do not believe it expands the mandate of GCSB. I think what it does do is clarifies fully in the law what has been the historical behaviour of GCSB under what they believed was their legal authority. And the bottom line is that because of difficulties in interpretation in the law, we need to clarify that law. But this is something that's been going on for a very long period of time under previous governments.
Why rush it through? I mean, they feel so critical of that.
Well, I just don't accept that. I mean, every time something passes that people don't like, they think we're rushing it through. I mean, there's a full process that's been held in the public domain. That hasn't been the case always before with intelligence legislation. They'll have an opportunity potentially to present orally to the committee, subject to the committee's wishes of who they want to hear oral submissions from. It'll be a full process that goes through Parliament. We're continuing to work on building a parliamentary majority. So, you know, these things are a pretty open and transparent process.
Peter Dunn's expressing reservations about supporting the bill which allows the GCSB to spy on New Zealanders. Are you going to be able to work with him to get his support?
He's voted for it so far. He's I didn't see his full interview on The Nation, but my understanding is that he's just simply saying it's got to go through the committee stage and have a look at those submissions and look at what the bill looks like. Bills often change as a result of either a select committee, in this case the ISC committee's work. I'm sure he'll take a good look at it afterwards. I'm hopeful he'll continue to vote for it.
He told us today he actually is pretty concerned about a bill that extends the power, which is obviously the guts of that bill. I mean, are you going to need him? And are you going to work with the likes of Winston
Peters? We're going to have to work with a number of political parties because by definition we're a minority government. Secondly, I don't believe it does expand powers, and we're happy to continue to work with him and any of the other partners. I mean, I think it's really important to understand that the reason we need to pass this legislation, you know, reasonably rapidly, is that the assistance that GCSB had historically been providing to defence and the New Zealand Police Force and SIS has now stopped. That puts New Zealand, in my view, in a slightly more vulnerable position, and it needs to be fixed up. But historically, that had always happened, and in the event that the GCSB legislation couldn't be passed, then that work would have to resume under the auspices of those individual agencies at significant cost. So it's not a question of whether surveillance work is undertaken against legitimate targets for which there is warranted authority. It's about who undertakes that. In my view, the right place is GCSB.
Winston Peters is still open to working with you to pass this law, even though they voted against it in the first reading. Are you prepared to work with New Zealand First to get this law through?
Yep, and we've made that clear. I mean, my understanding was they only passed, didn't vote for it in the first instance because it was passed under urgency. Didn't have much choice but to have that first reading under urgency to get through on the timetable that we want and get it off to the INSC. But yes, we'll continue to work with New Zealand First if they want to.
So will you approach Winston Peters again?
The invitation's been quite open, and we've already made it quite clear that we're quite happy for the officials to continue to brief them, and I'm sure there'll be further dialogue. He himself has said publicly and on the record, as a former Minister of Foreign Affairs, he's been an extensive user of the information that comes from the source, that he highly values it, he takes national security seriously, and I think on the back of that, he'll take a very close look at this legislation.
Would you be prepared to deal with him if he's asking for greater safeguards, such as a panel to look at warrants and stuff like that? Are you prepared to deal with Mr. Peters and, you know, come to some sort of compromise if need be?
Potentially, yes.
Has the Māori Party rolled out support directly to the
I think it's unlikely they would vote for it. They certainly haven't given any indications that they will. I mean, in the event that, again, we needed to broaden out that mandate, we'll go and talk to them. But at this point, I don't think it's likely they'll vote for it.
So realistically, it's going to have to be New Zealand First or Peter
Dunn? That's right, realistically, yes.
Do you chair the committee?
I do, and I'll probably chair it for some but not all of the submissions process subject to my diary.
So the first public
I'd expect to be there, yeah. And look, we've been, partly because of the number of submissions that we thought we'd get, which was manageable, and that the committee would orally want to hear, and because some of the other leaders who are on the committee are dealing with the Kararawarapi by-election, I tried to accommodate them by holding the submissions in July, not in June, but that fits the diet.
Harry, feeling about facing up to Russell Norman and David Shearer in the public forum, you'd be going to get to hear them?
Not bothered.
So when is the committee actually meeting this time?
I think it's very early July, something like, I can get you the exact date from my office, but it's early July.
Thomas, would you be happy for Aaron Gilmore to be back in your caucus? He's hinting on his blog post that he might be interested in putting his hand in the ring for Christchurch East.
Yeah, but my understanding was he's thinking about doing that as an independent. By definition, that means he's not part of our caucus.
Have you asked him that?
No, it's just he reports to the blog site.
What do you think of that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't get it.
Wow, no, it was you interpreter. I think it's likely your one.
Whitey River Power, market conditions have obviously got a bit more volatile the last few weeks and the price is languishing. Has that changed your thinking on Meridian at all?
No, I don't think so. I mean, what you've seen is, I can't and don't give financial advice, but in reality what you've been seeing has been a bit of a sell-off of the equity markets because the Federal Reserve Bank governor has basically been indicating that's the end of quantitative easing in the United States, and so yields are likely to rise in the United States. That's seen some profit taking in the New Zealand dollar, and it's seen some interest in yield stocks in the US. So there's been a bit of alignment. You've seen quite a number of New Zealand yield stocks coming off. Māori River Power has been one of those, but long-term government's on track for the mixed ownership model.
Given that restoring confidence in the capital markets was one of the aims of the mixed ownership model, do you think it's conducive to that for some of the brokers who were selling the stock to retail investors at $2.50 a share to come out shortly afterwards and say, oh, actually, we don't think the stock's worth that the next year or so?
Well, I think, hasn't one of them had a level of 248 as their 12-month target, is that right? To be honest, didn't have a really good close look at it, I just saw it fleetingly. I mean, in the end, you know, their clients, they are financial advisors, and it's for them to determine. But I think it's also important to understand that, you know, it's a yield play in terms of Māori River Power. It's a yielding stock. There's a whole lot of different things. They assume you want to build long-term support from their clients, and so they assumably give them financial advice that they think will continue to see them return as customers. And my view is that the mixed ownership model adds depth to the New Zealand Stock Exchange. It releases capital, which allows us to buy other assets. I think it's a good thing for New Zealand and for New Zealanders, and we'll see how it plays out over the long term.
Ministers discussed, or met last week at all, over media works and the tax liability.
No, and I haven't seen any advice on that matter yet. Do you want me to just give you we sort of reversed ourselves, and we're all keen to go, and I'm keen to go too, but just in terms of the House, in case you're interested, the government's going to look to make progress on the local electoral amendment bill, state sector public reform bill, and appropriation bill, and the psychoactive substances bill. I'm in Wellington tomorrow on Wednesday. And this Wednesday I'll also be meeting the Timor-Leste president, who is visiting New Zealand this week on a state visit. On Thursday I'll be in Christchurch, and on Friday I'll be in Auckland. Also plan to be in Christchurch this Sunday to attend the ceremony acknowledging the withdrawal of New Zealand Defence Force from Christchurch Central City, Broadwood Zone and Cordon. Thank you very much. Pleasure doing business with you.